Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello and welcome into the Take the North podcast, along with Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune and a weekly contributor on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I am Mark Grody of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan and I both cover the Bears on a daily basis out at Hallis Hall. Dan was in D.C. this time around. I was not, so he will be able to add some inflection points that I might not be able to. And we are definitely still picking up the pieces from the Bears' loss to Washington 18-15. In sports terms, it was a devastating loss for the Chicago Bears. A 52-yard Hail Mary touchdown pass to Noah Brown, where all sorts of things went wrong on that play. Many things to pick through and to dissect now that we've had a closer look at things. Dan and I also were part of a Zoom call today on which Matt Eberflus was part. So we're going to hear from him in just a little bit. We'll get to all the things that you want to hear about. We also heard from Kevin Byard, the Bears free safety. We heard from Cole Kmet. And we also, Dan, heard from Tyreek Stevenson himself. You were in the press box when that Hail Mary went down. Your opening thoughts on that and wherever, whatever direction you want to go to start with the Hail Mary pass.
I'll apologize out of the gates because I may go in about 45 different directions.
That's cool,
probably
man.
How Bears fans were feeling when that chaos ensued in the closing minutes Sunday in Washington. And to have a front row seat to that again was unbelievable, jaw-dropping. Like, the astonishment of that final moment is hard to describe, because you are sitting here in a game where the Bears were sort of beaten for most of 2.5 hours. And then they came back and found life, and they salvaged a win that they should have never had. And they stole a victory right from the Commander's clutches. And then there on that final play with Jaden Daniels running around with a play with 2 seconds on the clock that actually lasted 17 seconds and ends with the football in Noah Brown's hands. You cannot describe the emotional eruption in Northwest Stadium when that ball was caught. The people that were left were expecting to walk out of there with their chins on their chest, thinking, how in the world did the Commanders lose this football game today? And then all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, they had themselves a win. And the explosion of emotion in that place was incomparable. I do compare it to the double doink game from the 2018 playoffs because of just how unbelievable the exact final moment was, right? Like, upright crossbar turf, ball into a scrum, tipped back, touchdown. And just the overall disbelief that I experienced inside that Bears locker room after the game. You cannot ever get used to it, no matter how many times it's happened, walking into a locker room where you're seeing the blank stares of grown-ass men on a professional football team trying to process the gravity of what just happened to them. I spent most of my time, Mark, on the defensive side for obvious reasons, trying to get the breakdown of the Hail Mary, and we'll get into some of that in a little bit. But to see those stares, to see that dejection, to see that swirl of emotions, you never get used to it, and it was wild. And then just to bring it back to what you were talking about with Tyreek Stevenson, before the play begins, Brad Biggs and I are sitting in the opposite end zone with our view across the field at what's going to happen on the final play, and Tyreek Stevenson's down there waving to people in the crowd. Apparently, by his account, he was talking to Bears fans. He was obviously, I think, waving goodbye to some Commanders fans. And then the play starts. And the play's going on for 2, 3, 4 seconds, and he still has his back turned to the action. And Brad Biggs and I are saying, what the hell is Tyreek doing? Like, what's going on here? Then, Mark, as you know, to understand how that play unfolded and how Tyreek shirked his responsibilities on that last play and ultimately was the man who tipped the football into the hands of Noah Brown when he was supposed to not be jumping and tipping the football, but actually defending Noah Brown. It's unfathomable. And the Bears are still trying to unpack that to this moment.
Yeah, just picking up where you left off there. Yeah, Tyreek Stevenson was supposed to be, as they put it, they like to use basketball terms or volleyball terms, something that he was supposed to be boxing out Noah Brown. We learned that Elijah Hicks was supposed to be defending the tip. He was supposed to be the back tip guy. There was nobody behind Brown. Byard, Kevin Byard, from whom you will hear in just a little bit too, was the jumper. As he said, it's a free jump like in volleyball. He also said, though, basically, without getting too deep into it, that 85 pushed him. So there could have been an interference called on that. I get it, though. Like, that's not even a direction that I want to go.
Right.
You're not going to call penalties in those scenarios. I mean, I remember last year, Darnell Mooney missed the Hail Mary in the end zone. There could have been penalties on that play. I don't even want to go that direction. Why don't we get, though, to Tyreek Stevenson?
Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, let's start there. I edited together just what I thought was the most poignant parts of what he discussed. And you should know, too, that he did apologize to his teammates in one of the rooms at Hallis Hall, one of their meeting rooms. So he apologized to the entire team. He took responsibility. He did it on Twitter as well. So, he's done what he has had to do. I mean, essential competency as far as I'm concerned. But here is Tyreek Stevenson on his mistakes.
Only regret I have from yesterday is just letting this team down from, working hard and coming back and putting ourselves in a W column, and, just for me to be out of place and, do something that's out of character of me and just, cost us a loss. So my focus is on this building and how the people in this building feel. I understand there's anger. I understand, somebody ticket. I understand that the things that go outside of the building that could, possibly affect how somebody feels and all that. But, to be honest, I'm worried about the opinion of the building. And if these guys got my back, and that's how I'm moving forward. The play was, I posted box out 85. That'd be the play was, cheering with some Bears fans. When taunting, no fans. Was just cheering with some Bears fans, and the Washington fans reacted how they wanted to. My job was to box out 85. And, when I went up to hit the ball, it was pretty much to knock it down. And no interceptions, especially in a close game like that. So either could have went, Tyreek, good pass, knocked down, or we're in the situation we're in right now.
To the coaching side of it, Tyreek, what have the coaches said? And have, beyond telling you shouldn't have done that, are there any consequences for it beyond that?
I don't think there's no consequences as of right now. We haven't met with the coaches yet. We've been going over film and doing walkthroughs and trying to get everything corrected. So honestly, I can't give you no details on that.
Eric, Mark asked you a couple minutes ago about consequences. Being part of this team, when the standard is violated, what is the sense of accountability? What should be the accountability from one teammate to another in situations like this?
Pretty much what's going on now. You can't do nothing. You can't take back the game. It was yesterday. I understand the emotions and how everything flared up, but pretty much anything that a teammate could do is pretty much just point out the problem, address it how they feel it, and if I don't respect that teammate, then I take it a certain way. But I respect all these guys and I love all these guys, so all I can do is take it on the chin and let them boys know that, this won't ever happen again. They ain't got to worry about, me playing out a character like that again.
Dan, I think, to that last point, you and I were both very interested in that last part, obviously, in terms of accountability and should there be consequences. And the more I've thought about it and let this sit in throughout the day, I think that Tyreek Stevenson has done his part of, number one, owning up to it on Twitter yesterday when the video came out and it was undeniable, talking to the team today. And apparently that was, self-imposed. He did that without being prompted, and maybe he was prompted, who knows? So I do believe that the embarrassment in this day and age and the shot to the ego in this day and age, because this is what everybody in the NFL is talking about today. They're talking about the fact that they're going to use the Bears tape now to show what not to do and how not to act. And that falls squarely on 29 Tyreek Stevenson. Look, if the eight captains on that team think that Tyreke Stevenson should sit out a game or sit out a quarter, that's fine. But I think that if there are real consequences, like in the next game, I think you're only hurting the team because he is by far and away, it's not even close, the second best cornerback on this team. So I think you're hurting the team twice if there are to be consequences in the next game at Arizona.
It's a really interesting discussion because anybody that knows me knows that I'm not one of these meatballs that says, oh, you got to waive them tomorrow. You know, like you're going to take a second round pick and ship them out the door for one boneheaded mistake. At the same time, I don't think you can be in a position like Matt Eberflus is in and have a culture that's built around effort and purpose and concentration and have a daily sort of mission of saying you're not going to walk by mistakes and not address this with the proper sort of seriousness to it. Right now, I don't know what that discipline needs to look like. I don't know what it needs to sound like, but I do know that the players in the building need to feel like this is unacceptable and that this type of play cannot happen because it costs the Bears a huge football game. There's a human side of this. And I know Matt Eberflus is a guy who wants to focus on the growth and development part of the correction process. And so he's not going to be one of these hard ass coaches who comes on and does something to make a point. You know, that's just not his style. Is it right or is it wrong? I don't know. What we're going to have to see is how Tyreke Stevenson responds to this, how his teammates respond to him. Because there's no question here, Mark, that it was an absolutely inexcusable, immature display from Tyreke Stevenson that cost the Bears a huge game in a season where every victory matters for them, right? They're not going to have the margin of error to play with in this division and at their current state to be able to just afford squandering wins at the end of the season. And so this is a huge moment. And I don't think the outside world is overstating how big of a moment it is. And I think there are some questions about how Matt Eberflus is going to handle it with Tyreke Stevenson. We'll see where they go from here. I don't know what the right call is. The other side I want to point out here is that I give Tyreke a lot of credit for coming back today on Monday and meeting the media and hitting this head on. I would have preferred for him to talk a little bit after the game on Sunday. He did say in the locker room, I'll get you all tomorrow. And he was true to his word. So that's fair. Right. And I appreciate him having that professionalism to do that today, because we've seen instances in the past where this would have dragged out till Wednesday, Thursday, and the whole storyline would have just lingered for far longer than it needed to. And everyone would have been impacted, including the players in that locker room because of it. So I give him credit for hitting this head on Monday and getting behind him quickly. I also think that Tyreke Stevenson is a 24-year-old young man who's been through a lot in his life to get to this stage in his football journey that he's at. And he's a passionate dude. He's well-liked inside that locker room. Guys appreciate the energy he's played with. And there will be some forgiveness for the mistake. Now, look, it's not going to be easy for some guys in that locker room to look past this, because as we know, as we just mentioned, this is huge in the scope of the season, what happened on that final play yesterday. And you can't take it back. You can't erase it. But you have to own up to it to a certain extent. And the owning up process has to continue, I think, beyond Monday in ways where your work habits and your focus and your concentration on every play going forward is top notch. You know, because Tyreke Stevenson also had a penalty earlier in the game because he let his emotions get the best of him. And those types of lapses have to be minimized and they have to stop soon. And that's where the consequences, I think, come in.
Yeah, I mean, and not to pile on, but I guess I'll pile on. It was a tough day for Stevenson. You mentioned that penalty. He also gave up the 61-yard bomb to Terry McLaurin. So just generally speaking, it was a rough day. The cornerbacks are going to give up big plays. We've seen Jalen Johnson give up a couple of big plays, or at least one really big play this year. So that part happens. But let's, Dan, let's listen to Matt Eberflus, because this sort of fits in perfectly with what you're saying, the type of player that Tyreke Stevenson is, an emotional guy, seemingly a good guy from what I've been able to discern in the locker room. But this is Matt Eberflus on Tyreke Stevenson screwing around with the fans or whatever he was doing when he should have been lined up.
Yeah, I talk to the players all the time about it. You know, it's great to have passion, and I think it's great to have that great enthusiasm for the game. I said, but it also comes to a point where your emotions go over the top and then you lose focus, and you got to have to be able to have that balance. If you're that type of player that plays with great intensity, like Tyreke does, to be able to have that so it doesn't go over the top and you lose your focus and your concentration.
What's the proper discipline for a player like that in a situation?
Meaning what, Courtney?
Just, I mean, are there, it seems like there should be consequences for an action like that. How do you see that?
Yeah, we'll look at that. Again, those things are always going to be internal as we work with our players. you know, as we go forward. And it's really about development and making everybody better. You know, so we'll get to that answer as we go through the week. And but again, he did address the team in a team meeting room today. And again, it was a really good moment for him to be able to do that. It showed responsibility and accountability.
As your coaching staff is recognizing some of the extracurricular stuff that Tyreek's engaged in before the snap is happening, how is there a possibility of potentially relaying that information? You guys had timeouts left. Was there a way to get that play stopped so that you could maybe get everybody gathered, or is that just out of the realm of possibility there?
Yeah, you know, so from our vantage point, everybody was lined up in the correct position, and then we just were ready to go. You know, we already had showed those diagrams, you know, before. We were ready to go for that play. Like I said, we've practiced that, you know, multiple times, you know, a couple of times a week and multiple times since we've been here. So, again, it comes down to wiring into your responsibilities.
I understand as a head coach, and, you know, Dan, you and I have covered many a head coach in this town. I understand that you have to protect yourself to some degree, that you're not going to throw yourself under the bus for every little thing that goes wrong. But that was the one time during our Zoom call today with Matt Eberflus that I wish he just would have said, yeah, I had three timeouts left. I probably should have called the timeout. And yeah, he probably still would have gotten hammered for it. But at least you'd be like, okay, you know what I mean? Give us that much.
We can get into a little bit more depth on that in a few minutes, because I do think that that is part of the storyline right now, and Matt's inability to kind of give a little bit right to the outside world and letting them understand that he feels their agitation and he understands their aggravation. I'll go back to two things from that bite you just played. Number one, his assertion that everyone was lined up correctly, I would take exception with, because I just told you that two reporters in the press box with a view of things saw that Tyreek Stevenson wasn't properly lined up, unless being lined up is facing the stands toward the commander's bench and waving at fans. That's not proper alignment. It's just not. So I'll take exception with that. I also think what the outside world is looking for from Matt, and they're never going to get it because we're 3 years into this and it doesn't happen, is something more firm, more stern, and more emphatic. Something that just says it's inexcusable. It's a play that can't happen. We're a football team trying to pursue championships, and we cannot have guys putting selfish needs above the team's goals in a play where the only job is to finish one more play, and you walk out of Washington with one of the more improbable, riveting, rousing wins that you've had in a long time that was going to put the team at 5-2 and provide incredible fuel into week 9. And your behavior prevented that from being reality. That can't happen. It's inexcusable, and we're not going to stand for it. That's not that hard to say. I just said it very clearly and fluently here in 30 seconds on a podcast. I don't know why Matt can't say that in front of a post-game press conference audience on a Zoom call like we had on Monday afternoon, or in front of the team. Maybe he has said it in front of the team and we're not privy to it, but it just seems like there is a hesitance on his behalf to be firm with players in a way that would make them feel like he was an authority that might threaten them a little bit. I don't know if I'm being too strong with that, but I think you get what I'm saying.
No, I do. And to me, it says he's a little bit insecure in that way, that he is taking being a player's coach to a level that it shouldn't be. And that's fine. Like, it's good to be a player's coach.
Like, look across the division, right? Like, how do you think Dan Campbell would have responded to that situation? He would have felt for the player. He would have shown compassion for his player, but there would have been an outward display of raw emotion, right? And I think that's what a lot of people in the Chicago world want to see, is some raw emotion that lets you feel that Matt understands what exactly happened.
You should know that he has gravity, that if, look, you're the head coach of the Chicago Bears, you've got that gravity. I don't think he does. I think some of it, Dan, goes back to the first 2 years of this team, that they were god-awful, that it sure felt like he barely made his way back, you know, with this team this year. And I supported Matt Eberflus coming back, because for me, it wouldn't have been fair to have finally put a real roster together and be like, yeah, we're going to leave the coach behind. But I do think that because there was so much talk, there was talk about Matt Eberflus getting fired during the season last year, that he doesn't feel like he has that gravity with the players. And the fact of the matter is he should have that gravity with the players. And if he doesn't have that gravity with the players, then he shouldn't be here.
No doubt. If he doesn't have that kind of gravity, then there are serious cracks in the foundation that you're never going to be able to build the high rise that you're trying to build, because it will crumble, you know, and you've got to establish that. Look, we are in week 9 now. There is a long way to go in this season. There's a really critical stage here in the next couple of weeks to get this team regrouped and to respond. It's not a gimme win in Arizona by any stretch of the imagination. You better come back Wednesday ready to focus and practice and be dialed in, because there are consequences if you're not. And you may have something to add to that as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Bears at Arizona this week, home against New England after that. Then it begins, home against Green Bay and Minnesota in back-to-back games. One more Matt Eberflus cut right now that I want to play for you, Dan, because I know you were very interested and very much on top of this one as well. And that is, it's not just about – now, I just rewind one play, the second to the last play of the game, where essentially the Bears allowed Washington to, in the defense that they were in by Matt Eberflus, they allowed Jaden Daniels to complete a 13-yard pass to Terry McLaurin, which doesn't make for an easy throw for Jaden Daniels, but makes for an easier throw for it. And here, this is again, this is day two, Matt Eberflus talking about that moment and whether or not that was a sound decision to essentially allow that play to happen.
Then you've also downplayed the significance of the 13 yards on the previous play. I'm curious why you've downplayed that. And it seemed like you were motioning towards Jalen to come up on that play before that play was run.
Yeah. So they're, you know, in that particular situation, you always know that they're going to do, you know, with 6 seconds to go at the 35, they're going to either go for the end zone there or just try to get more yards and do that. So if you want to play sideline defense, what they're going to do is they're going to convert to the Hail Mary right there and then just run everybody off the sideline. Then you got to pick them up from the sideline and do the same job that you're going to do in the Hail Mary. So, you know, to me, you know, we wanted to just bring them up so we wouldn't get a something that's too far down the field, which it was to the 48. And then we set up for a Hail Mary at the end.
But you thought that Jalen could have thrown it 70 yards there as opposed to 50?
No, it's going to land. It's going to land somewhere, but you're going to end up playing the same type of defense. It's going to land somewhere in the in that area, how far you can throw it, you know, so 60, 65 yards somewhere in there.
I'm dumbfounded. I'm still bewildered by that thought process, Mark. And this is where you have greater questions about what's happening and whether this team is equipped to make the type of run they want to make this year and well beyond. Because if you don't respect those 13 yards and you feel like there was no value to contesting them in any way, shape, or form, explain to me the peril of trying to put your corners up a little bit, force them to make a contested throw. Let's say they throw it short of the 13 yards. Let's say they don't complete the pass. They don't complete the pass, the game's over. All they can do is run one of those crazy lateral plays. The assertion that a, you know, 65-yard Hail Mary was going to be the same as a 52-yard Hail Mary, it just defies mathematics and you know, human constraints in the NFL these days. We saw where Jaden Daniels' pass landed. It landed at like the 3-yard line, was tipped in the air, and landed 1 yard in the end zone in Noah Brown's hands, right? Subtract 7 yards from that. Subtract 10 yards from that. Subtract 13 yards from that.
Any.
Harris might win the football game.
Yeah.
So look, and I know you've got some sound from Kevin Byard to kind of be supporting evidence to this, but like, how are you so easily shrugging past that? Both exactly. After the game and then to your point, a day later, when you've had the time to think about it, you say, maybe we should have contested that a little bit better. I don't know that the risk reward was in our favor of not doing anything. You said the defense that they played no defense on that play. They just let Terry McLaurin run wherever he wanted to with as much time as he had to catch a pass and get out of bounds before the game was over. And they gave him free yards and they gave him an easier shot. at the end zone. It's no different than you know, knowing the range of a kicker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And clearly they miscalculated the range there, and that one makes no sense to me.
Yeah, no, and just such an unsatisfying answer. Like, you would have thought that he would have tweaked that answer or given something a little bit more plausible or something more satisfying or something more real, and he just didn't. And I'm being told right now, too, Dan, a couple of things before we get to Kevin Byard. You know, Jalen Johnson does his weekly hits on the Score on the afternoon show. He said, Jalen Johnson said that he also felt that they could have defended closer on the second to the last play. So Jalen Johnson agreeing with both of us. And just to go back a little bit as well, Jalen Johnson also saying that he thought the Bears could have benefited from a timeout right before the Hail Mary. The Bears had three timeouts before that. And so, you know, you'd have to think that a lot of this stuff lines up with other players, and it does, because Kevin Byard, as Dan and I, again, were on the Zoom today, which was originated from Hallis Hall. Kevin Byard was one of the people defending on that play, and he also had some thoughts on that second to the last play, the 13-yard pass to Terry McLaurin. Here is Kevin Byard.
I had a discussion with Flus about it. He has his feelings about it. You know, I think it's a lot of different ways you can defend those plays. You know, me personally, I think that in that scenario, possibly could have had the corners pressed up there because they just ran two outcuts and the play was called just to get a couple more yards to throw it down the field. If you had the guys pressed up, maybe they convert to verticals and they actually run the Hail Mary. But even if they do that and our corners run with those guys, he doesn't have I'm not saying he doesn't have the arm strength, but you think about the ball maybe landing 10 yards shorter and it may be a little different. I'm not saying that we don't know. It's always, you know, looking back at it, woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if things happen the way it happened, could we have sent pressure? Maybe, you know what I mean? But he made the call and, you know, that's what it was.
When you discuss that with him, is he receptive to your side? And were there other players who were kind of thinking the same thing along the same lines that you were?
No, I mean, I just brought it up. I was just kind of discussing it about it. But yeah, he's receptive. Of course he is. You know, I feel like he's been receptive of all the leadership and the things that we, you know, we've had to say and things like that. And I wasn't bringing up to him like, hey, we should have did this or whatever. I was just kind of going through it, just saying like, I guess looking at it for future references, you know what I'm saying? If something was to happen like that again, possibly that's a route that we take. But, you know, he was, you know, obviously receptive. And, you know, Flus been doing this for a long time, obviously longer than me.
Just something to keep in mind, right, Dan?
In the four future reference file that Kevin Byard is assembling for the Bears at Hell Assault, I appreciated that turn of phrase there. Look, like, yeah, it is something to keep in mind. It's funny that you bring up the comments that Jalen Johnson made on Monday on the Score, because I asked him the very question in the locker room Sunday evening. I said, do you regret not defending that last drive a little closer? And he said, nah, I don't. You know, and then he went on to say that the Hail Mary play is a play that they just have to execute, and that the Hail Mary play, in his words, was a bleeping free play to beat your man up. They're not going to call pass interference. They're not going to call holding. You just get down there and you beat your man up, and you out physical him, and you go to an extent where you just win the play. You know what I mean? Like it just becomes that. They didn't do it. They walk out into a week of turmoil and turbulence now, without question, that they didn't need to walk into if they had just handled their business a little bit better for two final seconds, which, again, I said lasted 17 seconds. I don't know. You want to do this for a quick second? We can go front to back on that Hail Mary play and address all 11 defenders who were on the field.
Bring it, baby.
And sort of talk about what happened. Just to give the people – this is something that you know, over 2 days, the reporting on this collectively has gotten us answers, right? So you've got a three-man rush up front, and it's Jacob Martin and DeMarcus Walker and Jervon Dexter. Montez Sweat's out of the game because he's got a shin injury. Okay, that answers that question. He can't play. He's hurt. Jervon Dexter doesn't look like he put in much effort on that play. If we're grading for loafs, that's got to be a loaf. Mm-hmm. Like, he sat there with the center, and he played patty cake for most of the 12 seconds, and Jaden Daniels was scrambling around.
And then he got knocked down. Right. I mean,
yeah, maybe blocked from the side and knocked down.
Right.
Martin and DeMarcus Walker did a good job at the start of the play, but they didn't pursue with enough passion. Okay. Jaden Daniels has got more time. TJ Edwards is left in as a spy, Mark, as a spy on Austin Eckler. You're 52 yards from the end zone and you're having your linebacker spy a running back. You don't even trust the seven guys on the back end. Eight if you send TJ back, or seven if you send him forward to rush the throw to be able to tackle in the open field. That one doesn't make sense to me. I kind of pressed TJ on that in the locker room on Sunday afternoon, and he quickly stopped the line of questioning and said, "We lost on a freaking Hail Mary." He didn't say freaking. He said the other word, and he was very agitated by it. But that's a question worth asking. Why in the world aren't you sending more pressure at Jaden Daniels? We've documented what happened with Tyreek Stevens, and you've explained to people that Kevin Byard is the jumper on that play. Sole task to go up in that pile of bodies and be the guy who leaps and knocks the football down. Jalen Johnson is assigned specifically to shadow Terry McLaurin, their best player on the field. You got him. Don't let him get anywhere. That's why Jalen Johnson is like 8 yards behind the scrum where the ball landed, because he's plastered to Terry McLaurin. And oh, by the way, he's got help from Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah.
Double team there. Yep. You've got Luke McCaffrey and Zach Ertz on the field. And I believe they've got, who am I missing? Blackwell and Jalen Jones are the guys assigned to them. Those guys did their job. Elijah Hicks, now, as you mentioned earlier, is supposed to be the back tip guy. So not only is Tyreek Stevenson supposed to be boxing Noah Brown out, he's supposed to have help there from Elijah Hicks. So two players left Noah Brown open in the end zone. You go 1 through 11 on that play, and you break that down, and people will use the rationale of, oh, it's just a Hail Mary. Crazy stuff happens when you put it in. The Bears didn't tend to the details. From the play that they called, from the way that they ran it, to the responsibilities that they had within the play, and that's what gets you beat in the National Football League. It happened to be on a high-profile play to end a football game, but it speaks to the lack of attention to detail that was present on that play, which is a game-deciding play, and ultimately is going to cost this team a lot. And so it was really fascinating, I think, over, I guess, now the last 24 hours or so, to unpack 1 through 11, what every single guy on that field was assigned to do and how well they did it. And then you just turn that lens back toward the coaching staff and go, okay, did they put their team in the best position to succeed?
That was a great breakdown. I think people needed that too, because we've just kind of been picking at it. And now that is the full picture put out there by Dan. And with all due respect to TJ Edwards, and I do take into account that it's the heat of the moment, even though they have their, you know, period of time before the media barges into the locker room. But this is this is something they practice every day. Like, it's part of what the Bears were. There is a method to the madness when it comes to a Hail Mary. Yes, there is a massive element of luck that goes into it. But I mean, hey, Jaden Daniels worked it perfectly. I mean, to have bought the time that he did to get in position to with which to throw the ball as best he could. There's a lot of technicalities that are going on, and you just laid them all out perfectly. I want to get now to something, you know, one of the underlying issues or really obvious issues. You talked about attention to detail. One thing that came up last week or this past week that DJ Moore shared with us is that the walkthroughs, they have gone to another level in terms of the attention that they demand in just a walkthrough. And I want you to hear from Cole Kmet right now, because Cole Kmet is talking about the Tyreek Stevenson play and what happened, but then he's going to get into the bigger picture issues with maybe Stevenson, with maybe other players. So here is Cole Kmet on Stevenson, and then I'll take you into a slightly different direction.
You know, unfortunately, in that scenario, like, he's a guy, you know, gets caught with somebody with a camera, and obviously the result of the play that happens and all those type of things. But I think it's a really a good lesson for everybody to learn from in terms of how to respect the game. And I think we had examples of that throughout the game and quite frankly, throughout the week of practice this past week, where, you know, there's moments where maybe some guys lay off here and there. And those are the type of things that can happen when you do that for just a split second. And you know, it doesn't always come to bite you in the butt, but when it does, it hurts. And that's the unfortunate, and I would also say beauty of this game, is that, you know, you disrespect it in a certain way, and it'll come to haunt you in some form of fashion. So I think it's a learning experience for everybody. We all play with a lot of passion. Tyreek plays with a lot of passion, and we all love him for that. But there's definitely a respect level of the game, and knowing that you got to finish it out until those double zeros at the clock.
But when you said there's moments in practice where people lay off, what do you mean? Just wanted to clarify what you're saying.
Yeah, it's more of a general thing. I'm not necessarily whether it's how you operate in the weight. And this is all like things done in the dark, things that only you know personally. And that's like, if you're in the weight room, are you doing all six reps, or are you doing five reps and getting out of there? Are you, you know, when you're out on the field, are you getting the jugs after practice? Are you doing this? Is your footwork correct in the walkthrough? And just those little things that can't necessarily always be addressed by a coach or another teammate, but things that you do in the dark that really come to fruition on game day. And I think that's what respecting the game is. And if you relentlessly respect the game, I think you'll get the results that you want. And unfortunately, if you get caught disrespecting the game in some form or fashion, it does come to get you at some point.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like it was a bad week of practice. When I hear Cole Kmet using the word disrespect the game a couple of times, that's pretty damning right there. So those are some troubling things coming out of the mouth of Cole Kmet. I will say this, Dan, and I want you to react to what Cole Kmet said as well. But I was asked, on the score, they were suggesting maybe, they're going to lose the locker room, that they're in a bad place and they're on the verge of that. I will say that I understand why people would ask that question based on some of the transparency that we've heard in the locker room. But I actually think it's because of that transparency and because of the fact that there are eight captains in that team. Be careful what you wish for, Matt Eberflus, that this locker room will stay intact. And as a matter of fact, I think I don't know how, wins and losses going forward. I'm not ready to make a prediction there, but I don't think that we're at the point where the locker room is going to be lost because again, just like the stuff with Shane Waldron, they are getting to it before it gets out of control. Cole Kmet came to the Zoom with a purpose and ready to answer questions like that today. And it's refreshing and quite frankly, necessary.
Yeah, that Cole Kmet should look at getting his own podcast someday up the road. He's a pretty good orator. He's a pretty good deliverer of messages.
He should come this way, though, really. I mean, he wants the goods.
When you think about the message that he's delivering there, it's sort of asking teammates, indirectly, are you pursuing excellence? Are you cutting corners, right? And so there's a way that things need to be done. And his comments on respecting the game and you'll get the results are poignant. And they're very important on a day like this to reinforce and emphasize with the people around you. The only thing that I took exception to in that entire bite from Cole was him saying, it's unfortunate Tyreek got caught by somebody with a camera. Cole, just an FYI, there were 64,000 people attending that football game. Two guys in the press box watched it happen and said, boy, I can't wait to get a look at the all 22, which is on every single play every week. Tyreek Stevenson wasn't caught by a hidden camera. He was playing a football game on the biggest stage of Sunday afternoon and his antics happened to be caught there. So I'll push back on that, but Cole is a great leader of this locker room for all the reasons he just articulated, because he believes in standards. He believes in the single-minded pursuit of raising the bar inside a building where it hasn't always been high enough, and so you have to continue to do that. You cannot celebrate an arrival before you've actually arrived. The Bears do that all the time, and then they fall through a trap door and we go, what the hell happened? I don't know how to explain it any better than that, but in terms of this losing the locker room thing, I wish I shared the same level of confidence you expressed. I would just say buckle your seatbelt, because these next couple of weeks, right? Like, you're playing a couple of games that if any of this carries over and leaks in and creates a loss to the Cardinals or the Patriots, look out. Look out, because the noise is going to get louder. The doubt from the outside is going to get amplified. And then inside the building, it's going to take extra effort to kind of hold it all together, because you know what's ahead once you get into the meat and the teeth of that division schedule.
And one play, and this is the last cut that I have, that created some controversy, obviously, and I'm sure players were curious. I know DJ Moore was a little curious when he was on the score this morning about the Doug Kramer play at the goal line where they hand it off to him and he fumbled. I will say this first. Dan, you were working two locker rooms and at podiums and doing things. I did the pod last night with Studs. And while it was a dumb play, I don't know if that's the first play you want. I wasn't as enraged as everybody else, I suppose, because I think that it was kind of leading up to this, and there was so much support for it. Like, fans have loved every single bit of Doug Kramer. I wasn't surprised that they gave him the football. I just wasn't surprised there. And I bet if you asked fans or polled fans before this game, would you like to see Doug Kramer get the ball at some point in time on the goal line? I think people probably would have said, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing something like that. Now, it backfired heavily. You know, we had Mark Schlereth was on the Score saying it's the dumbest play call he's ever seen in his life. But I gotta be honest with you, Dan, I wasn't leading the march of the outraged when Doug Kramer got the football right there.
I will push back on that because I think it reflects a lack of sense of timing. Right. Like that football game was not the type of game where you're trying to score style points. You couldn't get anything going. You had three completions near the end of the third quarter in the entire game where one of them was a 0 yard throw out to DJ Moore for no gain on fourth and inches. Right. And so like you were in a situation like the Bears were in a carnival game in New York in 2018 when they let Akeem Hicks score a touchdown. You have to have a sense for when those moments present themselves. I don't have a problem with the concept of the play. I think you have to have a sense of the moment. And the Bears were struggling and struggling and struggling. At that point, you just need to get the ball in the end zone without getting cute. And so I hated it. I hated it in the moment. I wouldn't have hated it in another moment in another game where it just felt like the flow was there for it. And Matt sort of said it was predetermined multiple times. He kind of said that was going to be our first play that we ran as soon as we got a play at the 1 yard line. You know, well, guess what? The handoff wasn't executed. The ball shot out. Johnny Newton had it, and you cost yourself 7 points. After we've established over the last month that you successfully troubleshot the problems in Indianapolis to the point where you discovered, oh, by the way, Roschon Johnson, pretty good. You give it to him, he churns his legs, he moves the pile, it breaks the plane, it's in the end zone, and you've got yourself a touchdown. Don't get cute in moments that don't call for cuteness. There'll be a time and a place for tricks. That wasn't it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and let's hear from Matt Eberflus today on the Doug Kramer play.
It sounded like you supported the Doug Kramer play call at the goal line, saying that you guys have worked on that and it's just 1 yard. Does that mean that Shane Waldron should feel free to call that play again in the future? Or is that something that you guys now look at and say, we got to pull that out of the playbook?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we always look at execution, and, you know, when things don't work, you know, we obviously look for a different answer, but we felt good about that play. We practiced that play. Like I said, it was the first play from the one. We had other plays to go to after that. Again, we just got to be better with the execution of the handoff there.
Yeah, I mean, so the irony, I guess, of it is that I was kind of getting on Flus, and I didn't keep my follow-up on there, but I asked again. I said, so then should Shane Waldron continue to feel free to call the play? So I'm the guy that's kind of half supporting what happened, but at the same time making sure that it's out of the playbook. So, Dan, I don't know where I am with this Doug Kramer.
I do think that Matt kind of indirectly told you, yeah, when something like that backfires that badly, we're going to rip it up and throw it right in the trash and not try it again. Because, oh my God, if we tried it again and fumbled again, oh my God, I'm probably losing my job that afternoon. Yeah. Look, like, that's a terrible play in a terrible moment in a terrible loss. It's particularly galling to me because you've assembled this star-studded cast of playmakers for Caleb Williams to the point where you took the number one pick in the NFL draft and you drilled into him for months. Use your skill. Give it to DeAndre Swift. Get it to Keenan Allen. Get it to DJ Moore. Get it to Roman Dunze. Get it to Cole Kmet. You've got guys to help you. And then you as a coaching staff get down to the 1 yard line and you say, let's try to put the football in the hands of a fullback. No, he's a guard. He's a guard. He's plays offensive lineman his whole life, and he doesn't usually have the football in his hands. No, 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 no. And I think this speaks to some of what is going to be a major challenge for Matt Eberflus to retain the internal belief of his players, because they stepped in it on Sunday, Mark. And for something I'm writing for ChicagoTribune.com right now, you were in a big stage game under bright lights in front of a bigger than usual audience on Sunday afternoon with an entire nation kind of checking in to see if your progress was for real or not. And the prevailing emotions at the end of the day were anger, embarrassment, and despondency, right? How familiar is that feeling to the Chicago Bears? And what does that mean for the people that are leading the organization when you had an opportunity to make a statement and those are the things you felt getting back on the plane and leaving Washington, D.C.?
Yep, a Bears three-game winning streak ends with a thud and kind of brought everybody back down to earth. We didn't even get into Caleb Williams, but I promise you we will talk about Caleb Williams as the week goes on here on Take the North, because the offense in general just wasn't good. The offensive line had its problems and its issues in terms of injuries. So I promise we will get to all of that, but there was just so much meat on the bone, and I know people wanted answers and they wanted opinions, and hopefully that's what we gave you here today on Take the North. Four. Dan Weeder, you got one more thing for us, Weedsy?
I was just going to give you a Monday morning tidbit from Reagan National Airport. There's a little quick outro for our audience. Okay. First of all, I misset my alarm for Wednesday, right? I have a weekly alarm to remind me to be on Mully and Hawn. I reset that one instead of setting a new one. And so my alarm did not go off. And I had a 6:58 flight out of Reagan National on Monday morning. So I roll over and I go, what time is it? Oh, it's 5:30. I got to get to the airport. luckily, I'm at a hotel very close, and I got to fly out of bed, wash my face, pack the suitcase, get in the Uber, fly to DCA, get there, and roll through. There's two parts of the story. So I get in the TSA pre-check line at Reagan National, sandwiching me in this pre-check line, NFLPA director Lloyd Howell. He's like seven people behind me, and three people in front of me, former U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr. Wow. And you remind yourself, you're like, oh yeah, I'm in DC. Like, this is weird. But you're in this surreal moment and low sleep, rushing the airport. You're like, where am I? Once I got settled at my gate and on the plane, and really up to this moment, outside of the work that I've been doing for my employer, I have not been able to consume enough content on this football game that was played on Sunday. This is one of those games where you're just like, oh my God, there is so much reaction nationally, locally, radio, print, TV, all of it. And you just, like, you cannot stop trying to get to the bottom of everything that we just talked about. So I thought this was a really healthy and meaty discussion, but this is one of those weeks, I think, where it's going to be all right there in front of us. Oh, and we've got to continue to dig with the shovels.
No doubt. I mean, I'd say we've gotten to maybe half of the stuff that we need to get to and discuss this week, let alone a game at Arizona next week. That's going to do it for us today. Dan Weeder, for Dan Weeder, and for our producer, Adam Stadinsky, I'm Mark Grody. This is Take the North. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing like you do. We appreciate it.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.